Marcy Rubin, and she'll be speaking to us on strengthening continuity of care, the journey to become a patient-centered medical home.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's great to see so much interest in this topic. So, I'll be speaking about strengthening continuity of care, the journey that we encountered to become a patient-centered medical home. And I just want to take a minute to acknowledge my co-author, Ethan Jacoby, who's here in the audience today. Many organizations face the challenge of being data-rich and information-poor, and that had been a struggle for us, and Ethan had really helped us to turn our data into useful information that you'll see in this presentation today. I have no relationships to disclose. So in this presentation, I'll give an overview of medical homes, talk about Metropolitan Hospital Center as a medical home, and our efforts to improve continuity and patient-centeredness, and the lessons that we learned through this process, and the advice that we would give to others who might be on their way to similar journeys. So patient-centered medical homes has become a bit of a new buzzword in healthcare these days, but it's really not a new concept. It was introduced by the American Academy of Pediatrics in 1967, and the concept is still the same today. The goal is to provide acute, chronic, and preventative care that really is patient-centered, is comprehensive, is culturally effective, and is really focused on the patient and the patient's family. So medical home recognition, we actually just heard about NCQA, and this is what we were working towards at Metropolitan Hospital Center. There are now these medical home accreditation programs, NCQA being one of them. They have a Physician Practice Connections Patient-Centered Medical Home Recognition Program that has three levels, level 1, 2, and 3, 3 being the highest. And they have these voluntary standards and guidelines that do provide a really good framework to achieve a medical home status for your organization. And it's also connected to reimbursement for us. And you'll hear later that we, through this journey, achieved level 3 medical home status through NCQA, and that then gained us enhanced reimbursement for our patient care visits through the Medicaid managed care companies in New York City. So who are we? We are Metropolitan Hospital Center, and we're a member of New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation, which is the largest municipal hospital system in the country. HHC operates 11 acute care hospitals throughout New York City that serve really the underserved communities of New York. The patient populations are socioeconomically disadvantaged. They're predominantly Hispanic and African American, and they're disproportionately afflicted with chronic diseases, especially diabetes, hypertension, obesity. And Metropolitan itself is located within East Harlem. And we're also a teaching hospital. We're affiliated with New York Medical College. And because of our affiliation with New York Medical College and as a public hospital, we operate a very large adult primary care service. It has 9 attending physicians and 58 residents that are currently rotating through that service alone. So to give you some insight into our experience, Metropolitan had decided that we wanted to really become a true patient-centered medical home. So we decided we needed to really focus on our primary care services. So we focused on our adult primary care, pediatric primary care, and HIV primary care. And we started by forming a patient-centered medical home committee to really get a multidisciplinary group together to talk about our areas of strength and identify our areas of weakness to decide where we should begin. So that committee consisted of ambulatory care services staff from adult primary care, from pediatrics, from HIV services, and from our information systems department, which was really key because we are fully electronic with our electronic medical record system and electronic billing, et cetera. So we really needed to make sure that we had good records that and good data that was accessible to us. And our managed care departments was vital to this because of the connection to reimbursement as we entered down the NCQA medical home application process. And so we set our goals of really satisfying the standards and guidelines of the NCQA patient-centered medical home recognition program, but we really wanted to improve the experience for our patients and for the staff and who are operating in these clinical areas. we wanted to show the value of the hospital to the community. One of the hospital's strategic goals was really to be the community hospital of choice in East Harlem, and the way to do that was to strengthen our primary care services, which are key to that strategic goal. So in September 2010, we completed our application to NCQA. And so just to explain a little bit more about what that is in terms of the NCQA process, patient-centered medical homes really must show that they provide full-time access and continuity of care. You need to first identify and manage your primary care population. For some smaller practices might be relatively easy, but for us as a large urban public hospital, we serve a population that is very transient. Many of our patients are in this country illegally or are homeless, and to get their appropriate contact information to be able to get in touch with them about follow-up appointments, et cetera, was very challenging. So identifying and managing them was really the first step for us. And then planning and managing that care for each individual patient, ensuring they have a really good care plan, and to ensure that they have self-care support and referrals to other community resources outside of our hospital system. And we needed to be able to track and coordinate that care so that we could measure and improve the performance. And also, in order to satisfy the needs of NCQA, we needed to be able to show this in terms of chart review, policies, logs, reports. So sometimes, even though you know you're doing something well, if you can't show it in a log or in a policy, you know, it really wouldn't satisfy those needs. So we also needed to make sure that in addition to what we were doing in practice, we could back that up with our policies and procedures. So one of the main focuses we had was improving our scheduling system. We knew that this was something that was a challenge for us with such a large adult primary care service. With over 58 residents rotating through the service, it was really important that patients know who their provider was. And we had heard that many patients felt that they didn't have a primary care provider because each time they came, they felt they were seeing a different provider. So we spent a lot of time working on redoing provider assignments. We created care teams with an attending physician permanently being in charge of 3 to 4 residents. And then clerical nursing staff were assigned permanently to those care teams and to permanent locations within our very large clinic that spans about 3 to 4 city blocks long, so that when I would walk into the clinic as a patient, I knew which module to go to, and that's always the module now where my doctor is with my care team, where before they were constantly rotating back and forth, so it was difficult to find them. And so this increased the efficiency and also improved the flow for these patients. We also ensured that all walk-in patients were accommodated by bringing on board a nurse practitioner as a walk-in provider. And another challenge that we had was physician coverage when physicians were either called to cover the inpatient wards or called out sick. And now we ensure that there's always someone to cover their panel, so no patients are ever canceled or rescheduled for that reason. And so as we improved primary care assignments, we first got a handle on our active patients. Those were the patients who were seen in the last year. And as we started this, we learned that we had over 15,000 patients in our adult primary care service. After about 6 months of continuing to keep on the list the new and returning patients that would come during that period, we now have over 20,000 patients in our adult primary care services that have been seen in the last year. And so as we went through and made sure that each and every patient had a defined PCP assignment, we first looked at who was the most common provider, who did they see the most often that they might have a relationship with. We then matched that with the managed care assignments to make sure that the managed care companies had the same thing that we did. And we also, of course, took into consideration the patient preference. If the patient wanted to be assigned to a certain provider, we made that change so they were assigned to that provider. But we made sure that each patient had a defined PCP and that there was an electronic list that was distributed on a weekly basis to all staff within the clinic so everyone at the touch of their fingertips could check to see who a patient's PCP was. So this took us 3 months to implement this large change with these care teams because it involved completely changing every physician's schedule. So over 60 physicians had to buy into a complete change of the schedule that many of them had for upwards of 10 years. And they did, because they really believed that this would provide better coordination of the service and better care to the patients. And then we had to educate our patients, and the providers took a large role in this, using business cards and discussion one-to-one with the patient. They educated the patient about what we were doing, who their PCP was, and what this would mean moving forward, that each scheduled appointment should be with their patient care provider. And we trained the staff to make sure that they really understood this process, they know how to use the PCP list. And we've got some very positive feedback as we started tracking the data. We saw that before we started this, in June of 2010, our continuity of care, which is, we calculate this by the number of patient visits with the provider, with the PCP of record, over the total number of scheduled patient visits. And in June of 2010, only 15% of those visits were actually with the PCP of record. So it wasn't, we clearly did not have continuity. In August of 2010, which was just as we were starting the implementation, it rose to 44%. And in September of 2011, it was up to 75%, much closer to where we want to be. Our target is to be 80% or more. Staff satisfaction has also been something that was really important to us in this process. Before we implemented these changes, there clearly just wasn't good staff satisfaction in the clinic. It was a bit of a chaotic place. They felt that they were being moved around. There weren't defined teams. And so through this process, we saw that as we engaged the frontline staff and got them involved in making the changes, they really started to feel that their opinions were valued and they really believed in the changes that were being made. And we saw this through a survey that's conducted in our hospital every year by our human resources department. This table is the result of our annual staff satisfaction survey. This shows the difference from 2009 to 2010. The question was, the needs of employees are considered when changes are made in our organization. And ambulatory care really scored the best in 2010. In 2009, only 20% of employees surveyed in that department thought that their needs were considered when changes were made in the organization. And the following year, 100% of those surveyed felt that their needs were taken into consideration, which we felt was really spoke to the changes that were being made. And so we felt that we've gained a lot through this process and learned a lot. We did achieve level 3 PCMH recognition through NCQA in October of 2010. The process itself really encouraged major changes in the structure and processes in our adult primary care services at Metropolitan. We felt it was really key to have our frontline staff involved in these processes. It really reduced resistance and it assisted with sustainment, because when they felt that they were being heard and when they were a part of making those changes, they believed in them and they didn't feel it was something coming down just from the leadership that they were being told to do. This was their change, this was their clinic, and that's really what made the difference for us. And we feel that it's really improved not just the staff satisfaction, but most importantly the patient satisfaction. Our patients now come in and they know their patient care provider. They're much more active in their care, and it's provided for a really better patient experience. And for those of you who might be undergoing similar changes in your organization, we found that task forces and committees were really useful in implementing change in shorter amounts of time. Getting together multidisciplinary teams, getting the input from them really helped in bringing people together. And anytime you implement a program where you're looking at when you're trying to abide by the standards and guidelines set by another organization, it can either be seen as a help or a hindrance. But we found that the NCQA standards and guidelines really were a good opportunity for us to restructure, and that's how we think others should think of them as well. Again, the importance of really getting the staff who are doing the work involved. you know, this is just the start for us. We have a long way to go to achieve the goals that we really want to achieve. We're now working on improving access to PCPs in our clinic. Okay, and that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
We have time for questions.
Sure. She was asking about how we feel the illegal immigrant population and homeless population can be included in the medical home model, since some people feel it's not really applicable. And I feel it's completely applicable. And, you know, I'm a bit biased working for the public hospital system, because that is our mission, is to serve the underserved communities that a lot of other organizations, you know, won't serve because they are uninsured. About 20% of the patients we treat in our services that are a part of our patient-centered medical home are uninsured, will not qualify for Medicaid or other services because they are undocumented immigrants. And so it becomes a large portion of our population. And we've made the decision as a system not to treat them any differently than anyone else. And we haven't found that those burdens, when you work with them individually, are that greater than dealing with the 60% of our patients that are Medicaid patients. It becomes a challenge in the beginning with gaining their trust, with getting their information. A lot of them are unwilling to give us proper phone numbers and proper addresses. And we've spent a lot of time working around that, coming up with strategies for making them feel more comfortable. Instead of asking them, we of course do have to ask them for their information up front, but at the end of the visit, they now fill out a self-addressed card that will be mailed to them as a reminder for their next appointment. So that way it isn't someone in the organization asking them for their information, they're filling out their own information. And we've noticed that people are more willing to give the correct information when they're filling it out themselves than when they're giving it to someone who they think is sending them a bill in the mail. So I think it's just a matter of adapting your strategies to the population you serve, but I think it's doable, and we really need to serve that population in this model.
So thank you for your presentation, and congratulations on the...
Thank you.
So I attend at a similar practice, mm-hmm. I think, and we also struggle with these issues. I'm hoping you can speak to two things mm-hmm. in particular. First, if you could talk some about how you operationalize the clinical team. We have over 100 mm-hmm. residents, and we mm-hmm. struggle with this. And specifically, how you communicate that to patients in the education team that you talked about. Mm-hmm. For us, we tell our patients you will see someone on your team, and the attending is the constant. But I think that's very difficult for our patients to understand. And it becomes complicated. Who is the primary? Is it the attending or is it the resident?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the ongoing debate. In our adult primary care service, our chief of service felt very strongly that she wanted each of the residents to have a defined panel of patients. So she wanted the residents to be seen as the PCP for their patient population, so which is different than what we do in pediatrics, where in our pediatric medical home model, we do it exactly like that. We have a care team, and we tell the patient, you'll see someone in this care team. So in adult primary care, the way that what we've done in taking this a step further is they've educated their patient population that they are their provider, and that they will only see someone in the rest of the care team if that provider for some reason is not available for their scheduled appointment, or if they show up to the clinic as a walk-in. But it took a lot of detailed scheduling, and it also required that on the chief of service side, in the past, a lot of the residents had rotated a lot more to other services, so they didn't have as defined of a schedule in adult medicine. And in order for this to work, they had to have a very defined schedule in adult medicine that doesn't change regularly. And so our chief of service guaranteed that for us. And that really is what made the difference, because now when we schedule these patients, we know that resident is going to be there when we used to not know that. And I think that's been the game changer, as well as that one-to-one communication between the residents themselves and their patients. Good question. We have what's called PCAs, patient care associates, which are basically medical assistants. And yes, they're a large part of our team in all of our services within the patient-centered medical home. And we're currently in the process of, as a corporation, looking at the PCA role and working on sort of how it's going to be changed in the medical home. It seems like a lot of organizations are expanding that role, and that's what we're looking at now.
Why don't we take three questions at a time, you'll answer, and then three more questions. So we'll take 1, 2, 3 in the front, and then we'll take 1, 2, 3 in the back.
Have you observed a change in patient behavior? People know when their person's going to be there, and they do make an effort to make an appointment when their person will be there.
Yeah, she's
going to
take...
I'm a little concerned I might not remember them all. that can actually be really quick. We have seen a change in the patient behavior. Now that they know their provider, they also get upset if they show up to clinic and their provider is not there. And that's really what we wanted, and we are starting to see that, and we hope to see it even more.
Mm-hmm. You said there was a 3-month period where they were sort of redefining their PCPs. How did you communicate to all of, or did you communicate to all of your patients about who their new PCP was, or was it kind of when they went mm-hmm. to the next?
During that period, we spent those 3 months, every patient that came in, the doctor that saw them explained to them the process we were going on and who their PCP was, gave them the card of their PCP and told them, this is the PCP, you'll see it your next visit, and from then on out. And we did that from then on, for every patient. Well, once we fully implemented, then everyone was seeing their PCP. And then that discussion would be had with their PCP. It was only during that 3 months. We didn't want to reschedule patients. So if you had an appointment with someone who wasn't your PCP, they would explain that during the appointment.
Quick questions, quick answers.
What was the process? You said that staff satisfaction was really helpful in knowing that their needs were being addressed. What was the process for their needs being addressed?
Mm-hmm. We used Toyota Lean methodology. We held a series of rapid improvement events that worked on the changes that were made in the clinic, and on those teams there were frontline staff, so they actually participated in the physical changes that occurred, and that's how they really bought into this process.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and also with ADSC, that our system in ambulatory care is almost similar, like for mm-hmm. we are facing concern issues on understaffing.
It's always a struggle. It is always a struggle. I think all the HHCs right now are looking at the care team model and looking at adding care managers and how we can better sort of work on that care management focus, which I think addresses some of the nursing shortage issues.
Quick question, quick answer. So I think 1, 2, 3, and I'm going to take them, but Amanda, I got your time.
Sorry.
They give us the schedule for the year, and they give us and occasionally there are some changes, but for the most part, it's a permanent schedule for the next year, we open schedules about 3 months in advance, so as long as we have that, we can book appropriately.
Star, and then in the back, yes.
I'm going to comment mm-hmm. on my question for later. Along with the National Community for Quality Assurance, I'm with the Joint Commission, and we mm-hmm. also have a new launch of our medical home primary care medical home product, but it's a different option now that's available for those organizations that are already accredited. The standards are roughly equivalent. Our approach is slightly different in terms of where you have to be accredited, and then we come on site to assess compliance with the additional set of standards under the primary care medical home. I'll save my question until a little later.
Okay, the last question is that.
Model. We are actually implementing an integrated model of care, all the primary
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a large behavioral health component within our hospital. During all of the primary care visits, PHQ-2 and PHQ-9, if needed, are performed as a routine part of the screening, and referrals to our behavioral health service are scheduled as needed. We have very good communication with behavioral health since they're in the same building as us. We also, for our sort of next year of further planning of patient-centered medical home, we have added our chief of service of behavioral health to our patient-centered medical home team so we can further connect those areas to better work on how the behavioral health patients are connected to care to ensure that they're showing up to their appointments in primary care, since those are always concerns. And that's something we do hope to strengthen over the next year.
Thank you again. Thank you.